guys hear me in the back? Okay. Okay, so it seems like everywhere you look, everybody's doing something AI, right? Every product, they're all, everybody's trying to put AI to something that they're using today, right? I mean, I've got, my brother-in-law's got a vacuum cleaner that uses AI to map out his house, and it's like he's launching the Mars probe every time he vacuums his house. My wife has a planter in the kitchen that uses AI to determine if her basil is thirsty or not to do some of her herbs that she uses in the kitchen. On my way here, I heard on the radio that I can now get my contact lenses custom made for my eyeballs because they're using AI. Everybody's putting AI into everything that you can imagine. But what happens is it gets us as service providers wondering, how can we leverage AI? What can we do with AI? And the problem is there's so many use cases you hear about. It's all about features of AI. And I know it's hard for you guys to see in the back, but all we have to talk about is things like pattern recognition or autonomous vehicles or knowledge management. So we're trying to figure out in the service provider world, how do we leverage AI? So my goal this morning is to try to walk you guys through to get rid of some of that noise, right? Because this is kind of a telco term. It's signal noise ratio is really bad with AI. So my goal today is to help you understand what we're actually seeing in 80+ with people and service providers, how they're using AI in their networks. So what we did, so E+, we're very engaged in the AI initiatives. We have an entire team that does all things AI. We have, I think, 99 engineers that are like top level certified with NVIDIA and all their DGX and all their enterprise software. We work with all the major OEMs. We got Big Panda, we got Selector AI, we've got Juniper, Cisco, all those guys doing AI. We have the teams that are, I'm on a WebEx chat with 96 or 97 engineers, and all they talk about all day long is how these tools do, how do we do it, building these types of designs. But as part of that initiative, E+, we did a survey of 200 companies to kind of understand where you guys are all at with AI. What we found is that almost 75% of the respondents of our questions said that they have plans to deploy generative AI or like a ChatGPT-like service in the next 12 months, 74%. And if you guys have thought about this, and I saw they asked in the room if you've been using the AI, the adoption roadblock that we see that our customers are telling us is 41% of them are saying it's just we don't have the expertise. We don't know what to do. We don't know where to go. Roughly 40% said it's too expensive, and 35% said that it's they have security concerns. But Gartner report actually predicts that of those 74% of people that are going to deploy AI this year, 30% of those use cases will be abandoned by the end of 2025. So we're saying a lot of people are trying to get into this. If you look online, there are new AI companies coming on the market every single day, probably equally as many that are failing every single day. So our goal at E+ is help you guys figure out how do you set up for success. And obviously this is kind of more of a marketing slide on this one, but I want to show you, we're going to walk through actual use cases that we do at E+. So at E+, what we do first of all with the AI journey is we actually classify you guys into three different tiers. So this is really a small screen, but I'll just kind of point it for you. So the level one is where probably most everybody's at. We call this AI curious, right? So if you guys are AI curious for E+, you kind of feel like you want to use AI, you think it'll help your networks, you think it'll help your operations, but you're not really sure how to get there. Maybe your data, most of our service provider networks, their data is all in silos or just not ready for AI consumption. This is the majority of people. I think I've given this presentation probably 6 times now, and every time we do this, we do like a survey, and always like 90% of people are in the AI curious stage. But as the customer that we work with, when we work with the customers, as they get them past curious and start showing them what they can do with AI, you get to what we call AI ready, where you're actually ready to deploy AI and you have some use cases. And this is where an inflection point comes, where somewhere between where we get you past curious to kind of ready, people start asking me, okay, now I understand it. I know what I need to do with it. Do I buy my own hardware? Do I just run it on a server at my house? Do I run it? Do I go out and lease hardware? Do I use AWS? Those kind of questions is where we typically get. And then as we get through the journey, eventually we get to the point where we're considered AI mature. I've had nobody, none of my customers have on these shows have ever said they're AI mature at this point. So our goal is to get people from the curious stage to the ready stage. So when people ask me, like, what kind of projects do we see, we can put it in three buckets. The first bucket is for the productivity. I think Jimmy already talked about ChatGPT. A lot of people are using ChatGPT whether they like to admit it or not. I actually had an engineer for a company that I talked to last week. He came to me and said, I need to do AI. I know I need to do AI, but he's actually never logged into ChatGPT. And he's I don't even know anything about it. I just hear about it. I need to do this. So this is actually where we see a lot of activity. The productivity, but what you guys probably care about and what most of my customers care about is the one in the middle, IT efficiency, AI ops. How do we make our network more efficient? How do we lower costs? And most of all, how do we prevent truck rolls? How can we leverage AI to make things work better on our networks? Last one is business specific. We do have customers that are actually using their new revenue with AI. I got a customer that's actually buying GPU servers and then leasing them by the hour to companies that can't afford to buy their own physical server, or they don't want to put that much investment in quite yet. But the key to all of this that's gonna help prevent you guys from failing is the bottom here is AI, it's the security and governance. And Jimmy talked about it earlier, a lot of it's gonna come down to the governance of that data. And as we walk through some of the next slides, you'll kind of maybe make it more clear. So we talked about the AI curious stage. When I first got into AI, I was really curious about how it works. And I didn't just want to know like what apps do I have or what services can I provide, but I want to know, well, how does that work under the hood? Like, how does AI actually work? So I started doing some studying on it, research. I think what I found might actually surprise you guys. So AI is not that new. It's been around for 50 plus years. You know, scientists and researchers have been working on AI, figuring out AI. And actually, of all the tools that we have, you know, your phone, cell phones, your cameras, whatever you're doing, there's really only one goal that we're trying to accomplish over all of this for the past 50 plus years. And the one goal is they're trying to emulate the human brain. And if you take a look at how AI actually works, it's exactly what they're doing. In fact, they actually went as far as they were putting probes on cats' heads and studying the electrical signals to try to map that out. And that's why we call it, like, AI uses neural networks, is because it's emulating the human brain. So the parts that you need to know about this. You probably heard the term large language model. Anybody heard that term before, LLM? Yeah. So the way I can describe this is the brain. This is what's trained to understand the reason. It's kind of like your own human brain. You guys all probably went to preschool, right, kindergarten, high school, college, taking classes, coming to this here. You guys have learned over the past years how to reason. You've learned sentence structure. So if I was to get in front of you and give you some brand new, like the RockNet guys are up here, right, if they gave you similar solutions, you probably won't be able to get in there and just do it. But once they trained you on it and they provided you guidance, you're fine-tuning your brain to know how to run that software or do that solution. That's exactly how AI works. So most engineers tell me, I don't trust AI in my network because it's always wrong. Right, you probably heard that. You type in, write me a script and it's always wrong. Well, the reason for that is because you're using the brain it's a software as a service, right? It's intended for me to ask a question about computers and my wife to ask a question about a recipe. It's not fine-tuned to what we're trying to do. So what we do in E+ is we actually train and fine-tune these. So when we're doing things like trying to get some sort of network monitoring, I'll show you some of the applications that we're doing. We're actually feeding the model additional information, just like we're feeding you information today. So we need to train the model to understand what we're doing. And that's why you get not such great answers. It's getting better, right? Surprises me some of the answers it gets now, but it's not quite there where you might trust it to manage your network. But if we peel that onion open a little more, what's interesting is they didn't just take the brain, the neural network. There's actually the two personality types that are part of AI. So you probably hear people say, oh, that girl there, she's a left brain person, super analytical. or this guy over here, he's very artistic, he's a right brain person. They've actually taken that same concept with AI. So the, what we say in the left brain here is the AI ops. That's the machine, the big machine learning, right? What they call it, is it Skynet, that they call it in the Schwarzenegger movie? That's like the brain that, that consumes all of the telemetry, all the information, and it does this thing. But the problem is that us as humans, it's pretty hard to talk to that kind of brain. You get in front of somebody really smart, that's like super intelligent, maybe a, it's harder to relate to those guys. When it comes to like computer language, it's even more difficult. So the right-hand side of the brain is the human empowerment. That's the generative AI. So when you guys are going out to, we're out to ChatGPT asking questions to ChatGPT, that's the right brain piece of the AI talking, and you're able to talk to the big, the deeper and more knowledgeable piece through generative AI. And as we talk about the stuff that we're deploying, that's maybe the really important part, because we're using Gen AI to make complex systems usable to people. So I'm going to take you really quickly kind of behind the curtain to the secret sauce of what we see people using AI for in our service provider markets. And honestly, the biggest interest we have is network operations. Everybody wants to try to figure out how to better predict, prevent, and optimize their networks in a way that they're not just being, they're not being reactive, but they're actually proactively finding things before they happen. I have a customer right now that actually, if you imagine knowing about a network failure before it even happens. He operates a CMTS, a cable modem network, and we realize that there are like, there's a scenario where for 5 modems that change downstream channels at a certain time frame randomly through the day, he knows that in the next 2 days he's going to send a truck out to fix something. So we're using AI scripts and AI intelligence to watch for that pattern. And he's able to go out there. He still can't figure out why it's happening, but he knows how to stop it from breaking things. So we're watching proactively, predicting the failure before it happens, and then we're going out there and just run. You know, he's making his changes in the network, and we're preventing that truck roll. Because what's a truck roll cost nowadays? It's over $100, isn't it? Easily over $100 in truck roll. So we're trying to lower the cost on that. I have another customer that they finally embraced automation. They brought in this guy right out of college, super great, good at what he does. Got net DevOps going, got the port migration, got the service delivery team going, and then he got so experienced, but guess what he did? He got a new job and left the company. So the company was sitting there, engineers looking at documentation saying, I don't even know how this works. We're halfway through this project and I have no clue what he did. So what did we do? Plugged in AI explaining exactly what they did, why they're doing it, documented it. Here's where maybe you could be doing that a little better. And that project went from stalled out to actually completing because we're using AI to understand what that guy did. Another example for you guys is tribal knowledge. Every network, probably your networks as well, you guys probably one person that is like the walking encyclopedia for your network. They know everything that's ever happened. They know every BGP, every weird BGP problem that you have to do some strange setting for, they know that in their head. But what happens when those guys are reaching their retirement age? You know, a lot of the, I still work with customers that still have Sonnet. I don't know if you guys have any Sonnet in the network still. Some of the legacy TL1 commands. Nobody knows that stuff anymore. So what we're doing is we're taking all of the data from that, all the notes, all the chat logs, all the trouble tickets, and basically trying to build a virtual version of that engineer in the case that they standardizing configs is a big one too. I've got a customer that they have service centers all over the U.S. and it's pretty easy to, you know, it's easy to create a standard for configs. Tell your guys you need to have these in the configs. These are access lists. Here's your naming conventions. It's a whole other thing to get them to actually listen to that and do it. And what he found is he had like 900 routers and nothing was standardized. So he was going to go through manually and try to standardize, fix all this. It would just be brutal, right? So we're using AI to come in and help, you know, pull the configs down and identify which ones need to be reviewed, which ones need to be edited. You talked about Slack this morning. Slack or something like Slack or Discord. This is the one that I actually have running in my house lab, which is, I think is fascinating. I can't I'm probably getting divorced because I'm always playing on this application. So what I did was, anybody here use NetBox in here? Any of you guys have NetBox as part of your, there's a couple in the back there? Okay, so if you ever use NetBox, NetBox is a tool where most of our companies, they record all of their, you know, IP space, all their circuits. They've got all their servers in their racks, all their rack locations, all their upstream providers. You just go log in and you go try to find all that stuff. So what we did was I created my own NetBox instance in the lab and used AI to build 100,000 node, a fake network of 100,000 nodes. But what we're doing with it now is instead of going into NetBox and trying to find things, I'm actually using AI to translate the commands that you would use through their API. So translating the computer commands to natural language commands, and then we put that into Slack. So to tell you what that would look like is, if you're in a maintenance window or you're just working through Teams and you're using Slack and you have a question like, okay, what circuit number is this customer? What customer has this IP address? Or what type of circuit does this customer have? You could probably go out and look in NetBox, or you can just mention Slack and mention the bot in Slack and say, hey, what in natural language, hey, what's the circuit ID for this customer? And it translates that to the API calls to NetBox and actually gives you the answer immediately. So if you're in the middle of a maintenance window, you're like, oh my gosh, if I drop this link, how many customers will be affected? Who will they be? You can go look it up in NetBox, or you can just mention the bot and say, if I drop this link, how many customers will be affected? It will go out and come back and break. Those kind of things is what we're trying to do to save time and help you guys with your network troubleshooting. PCAP analysis is another big one. If you guys are capturing traffic, we had a customer that was having troubles with their DDoS solution. It wasn't redirecting traffic. They didn't know why, they just knew that it wasn't working. So what did we do? We took a PCAP, took a capture of all the traffic. We already had a bot, we call them assistants. We had an assistant that was pre-trained to understand PCAP files. So we just dumped that PCAP in there, and it actually created a SIP-like tree. If you guys are familiar with like the SIP trees where it shows you all the messaging back and forth, it created a SIP tree for me and told me exactly which router was not sending the right information to handle that DDoS attacks. So you can see we're not doing all this, like pulling AI fully and just spread across the network. We're finding these little wins and these little things that make things a lot easier for us every day. And at the end of like a maintenance window, how many people, like, you're doing maintenance window from midnight to 6 in the morning, how excited are you to create a post-mortem or an after-action report to get to the customer or to your management? So we have people that are actually going in and just recording what they're doing in their notes with and then we're getting the timestamps, and so you can actually, at the end of the maintenance window, we just have AI create that whole thing for us. Gives all the timestamps, gives us what happened, and then tells us, so we can give a report we can actually hand to a customer that says what they did. We don't have your guy that's been chugging 3 Red Bulls, that's on 2 hours of sleep, trying to put together some cool document for your customer. So we kind of talk about like behind the scenes guys. How long do I have, by the way? Until 10 o'clock? Okay, I'm gonna have to move faster. So a couple things we do with the, as well with the, so with behind the scenes guys, what do I just talked about, but what about the field techs, right? The guys are out there climbing poles. How are we helping them out? Because at the end of the day, we're trying to have faster resolutions, we're trying to decrease the truckloads. And what we're seeing, and I'm not sure how it works around here, but geography is not really the reason why we pick a certain repair or a certain tech on site anymore. Like I have a customer that has multiple cities, multiple states, and he has techs all over all these states, but he doesn't, what he's doing now, he's had troubles because he has to get a hold of the manager for this technician, and then he finds out that tech doesn't know anything about the technology, or isn't close to the sparing location. So they're using AI to do more intelligent dispatch. So they can go and try to figure out, here's where the trouble ticket is, who's the right technician for the job. Instead of calling 3 people to figure that out, they're able to determine right away what technician has been trained or certified, which one's closest, which one's not currently on a trouble ticket, and which ones is going to be able to get to that spares if they need that. So it's changing a lot of on that in both sides of it. But the key to all this, I'm sure you've heard it 100 times, is the security and threat detection. This is where you're going to see probably the most amount of software products that are going to be in front of you for AI. Everybody's going to come to you and say, all the hackers are using AI. You need to buy my security product. And it's true. I mean, they are using AI for this. But what the way AI is changing for us, the security is now the threat detection is a whole new ballgame. We're no longer just using signatures, and we're actually like monitoring the network, understanding the network, and finding some of that stuff that's maybe like right in plain sight, but just super quiet and not throwing any of the logs. We could spend like days on the security stuff, but it's just not a very sexy topic for people to talk about for the most part, so we'll just go to the next one. Customer service chatbots are huge for customer service. I mean, we have a customer right now that deployed a chatbot for their tier one support, and within 6 months they dropped 40% of the calls that would go to a live person were actually dropped in within 6 months because they could get the answers through the chatbot and didn't have to go to an actual live person. We have customers in the Midwest that have, there's a lot, maybe they're here too, a lot of like, there's English speaking, Spanish speaking, lots of different languages. Maybe they can kind of speak English to some extent. Not everybody can have somebody on staff that can speak all those languages. So we have customers that are looking at multilingual support to be able to help give a better quality experience to the customers that maybe English isn't their first language. So this is gonna be really hard for you guys to see back, but I'll walk you through. What I'm gonna do here is what we did was we built this solution to show what this looks like altogether. So we talk about the left brain analytics, the right brain kind of generative AI. What I did was I have an AI agent that we simulated a trouble ticket, or we simulated a problem on a network. What I did was I basically just unplugged the, actually we moved a fiber cable to simulate this problem. And what I'm trying to show you, I'll just walk you through because I can't even read it from here, so I don't expect you guys to read it all from there. But what we're really doing. So what happened is AI actually detected the problem. And it gave us a typical, here's a problem, it's a critical, this is what time this happened. But because we're pulling all information from many, many sources and having AI actually figure out what's going on, it also pulled in the background of what analysis of what actually happened. So what I thought I was doing is breaking one customer, which we called Acme Company. But actually, AI identified five more customers that I actually broke. I didn't even know I broke when I pulled that cable. And then what it did was, the next step, what I have AI doing, it's only doing this all at the same time, is it started looking at the logs. This is the key to what, when we do AI within Service Provider, is you always want to show your homework, right? So when we do this, so if you could see this, and I can send this slide, or we can talk about this later, but we're not just saying this is the problem. We're showing why we think, why does AI think that's a problem? And when we do any of the use cases and stuff that we test, we actually show that this is what the answer came to, and here's how we got that answer. So we can trust the answer. But at the end of the day, really what we're doing here is it's going through and checking everything. It checks to see if there was a planned maintenance window. Has it seen this before? It saw it before, but not on this router. And then actually gives you a full readout of exactly what to do next. We pulled this from syslog, from SNMP traps, from NetFlow data. Basically, have AI, like a super tech, you know, super engineer that's able to read all your logs and all your data and determine what the problem is right up front. So this seems really cool, right? People are like, okay, this makes sense. I could do this. But we still have people that are hesitating on the next steps. But you guys are probably still in the same boat. This stuff sounds pretty cool, but man, I still have my concerns. And I can tell you that there's basically four primary concerns that we see with AI/AR whenever we talk to people about this. First concern is cost. Right, the first thing you talk about, right? You look at like renting the GPU in the cloud, it's like $4,000 a month to rent a GPU.
So John, that's what, you know, one thing, as a small electric co-op running a broad network, we don't have the funds, we would like to take advantage of AI, but, you know, and we know everything's put in there on the internet, so we can't really ask network-specific stuff on it, but
right.
What's the ballpark cost of, for somebody like small co-op, for example, to have our own instance of AI that we can load in our network stuff with knowing that it's secure and it's not going on public internet and take advantage of everything that you're talking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. And maybe we don't need to go through the rest of the slide deck. Maybe we can go from there. Because that's a good question we all the time.
But yeah. We never know exactly how much, you know, my CEO is like, yeah, we would like to invest it, but it'd be nice to come back and give them a ballpark number of what it would cost.
Yeah, I mean, all it comes down to, do you guys all hear this question? Mm-hmm. You all hear him? Okay. So, I mean, it really comes down to what use case you're going to do. I mean, if, what we do at E-Plus, let me see if I can pull another slide.
While you're looking for that slide, may I
come
in? I would encourage you, there's an individual or two individuals in the back that with the Alabama AI Center of Excellence. They have GPUs sitting in racks. Their whole purpose for existing is to address these issues for rural, for cost conscious, and hand-holding people through the process. When you look at those numbers of cloud, and I'm breaking my rule, right? We're supposed to let you finish.
Oh, go ahead.
We're network operators. We always break rules, right? So it's Andrew Robert, would you raise your hand? Nick Buell, hit those guys up. I think they'll be happy to talk.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to really range based on whatever you guys are doing. I mean, I've got customers that are buying, you know, servers with GPUs in them for, you know, they get like the NVIDIA L40Ss. It's costing them maybe $35,000. But that's just the hardware. What's that?
A month or a year?
That's how, if you're gonna, so you could, basically what you could do is you could buy your own hardware. So you could buy a server with the NVIDIA GPU in it, and then you could, but then you have to have all the rest of the software, all the licensing, all of the actual development time. So a lot of the costs you run into when you do it yourself like that is really more the development from what we've seen, not as much in the hardware, depending on what you're trying to do. I mean, that server might not necessarily size for what you're trying to accomplish as well. So that's why what we do at E-Plus, this might maybe help lead into this, is we started out going out to these sessions like this and talking to you guys about use cases. Here's some use cases. Let's sit down and talk about what we can do to deploy AI in your network. But what happened, what we noticed is that it didn't really lead to anything. To your question, like how do you show ROI value and understand what's it gonna cost to deploy this?
But you're talking data extraction, right? And you're training AI to bring in those separate files.
So what we do, we do basically the full-on approach. So it's a good question. So it's what we start with. These are all good questions. This is where everybody is at right now. I think with AI, like, where do we start? What does it cost? Is it even feasible? And how do I prove some sort of value? So the way we look at it is, we try to find use cases, and actually what we do with our proof of concept lab is we'll actually sit down with you guys and talk about these kind of questions, figure out what you want to do. We'll come up with a number of use cases, like what we kind of described, and then we try to pick one that we think is maybe low-hanging fruit, that's not too difficult, but can give value, and then we'll actually put you through a proof of concept where we get you on one of our private LLMs where you can get in, and we'll actually let you test that proof of concept for you, so you don't have to buy hardware, you don't have to buy a bunch of subscriptions. We get in with you guys and figure out what that would look like. And what we do with it is we actually come up with the metrics to show you, to your point, what's that gonna cost. So our tool actually goes through and watches how much did this user actually use this, how many conversations they had, even if they're communicating with other teams. So our POC that we use is to address your exact question. We pull you in, we have guys that actually go help you with the data. It's not all the data, because we're not going to take in all your data in one step. We're just going to find an application. And sometimes what's interesting is some applications, if we find an application that's going to save you $50,000, but it's going to cost you $100,000 to do it, it doesn't make sense to do that. Some of the stuff we found isn't real sexy applications, but if it's $50,000 to do it and it saves you $100,000, then it makes sense. So what we do is we'll pull you into a proof of concept lab. Like I said, we'll come out, sit down, talk about your guys' specific solutions, figure out what we want to do. Is that a chat bot? Is it anything that I showed here? And then we figure out if that makes sense or not. And we get you into our environment where it's secure, it's private. You can test it out for a month, and then we can determine if that made sense or not. Maybe we'll abandon it or maybe not. And then we'll be able to show you the ROI for what it might cost and what it would look like for value in the future.
So you're training or grooming AI to accept your data?
It's a good question. So we're not, what we do, the way we do it is we use the Llama large language model from Meta. So the way it works actually is we use something called retrieval augmented generation. We actually take your data that you want to be using for your specific training, and we put it into what's known as a vector database. We put it into a database, and then we actually are telling the brain to use your data to be able to answer those questions. So we don't actually go out and fully retrain the model, because that would cost millions and millions of dollars, and we consume millions of gallons of water just to cool those systems. But we do pull you into a private environment where you're safe to put your data. Like we have it at E+, use it all the time. It's amazing for what the chatbot we use. I had a call the other day. I got pulled into the account that had an email question trail about something they wanted to buy. They had 15 emails in that trail. I was able to copy the entire email contents instead of scrolling through and trying to figure out who asked who what and where they're at. Copy the whole email contents, put it into our own private LLM, and it gave me a summary of who said what, when, what questions were answered, what's next steps. Like, took 2 seconds and it had everything. I would never put that into ChatGPT. Because, I mean, that's the problem. Most of your customers or your employees are probably doing that. Like is it training the model? It's not training, obviously. If it was, we could just put a bunch of garbage out there, and then we could help make the, you know, ChatGPT be really messy.
But you got something disparate.
Yeah.
Separate data.
You got to have separate data. Because it is, so when I first started ChatGPT, I paid for the subscription, not the $200 one. What is it, 20 bucks a month or something. So when you read that, the terms and conditions, they tell you your data, your stuff you put in here is not being used to train the engine. But then I signed in for a developer's account, and I do AI development on it, and their terms actually say, by the way, it does sort of use your data if you have a $20 one, but luckily not, you're a developer, it kind of, not as much, but sort of can use your data. So it's still sort of a nifty sort of deal, but we just try to keep, you want to keep your own model for your own private needs. Yes?
The first use case where you talk about monitor CMTS or data off of CMTS. Say you had a couple of errors to CMTSs and you wanted to do something like that.
Yep.
Is it an SNMP feed off into your server, or how would you go?
It's a good question. Yeah. So if you have some error CMTSs, you said. Yeah. So we can really. I mean, we can use any way you connect to that. That's the beauty too of these solutions, is we can, some, there's APIs already built in, so we can talk directly to it, or some legacy gear, we can use Telnet, we can use SSH, we can use SNMP, sometimes they use telemetry. It's just really however you talk to that device, we can, you know, API is always preferred, but there are a lot of legacy devices that just aren't gonna support us build to do that. But yeah, that's a good question. That would be something that would be 3 minutes. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, they're all great questions. Probably could have just not shown anything on the first slides. We could just talk about this, but essentially what we do, what we suggest you guys do at E+, is we like to start small and think big. So all these ideas, if we couldn't deploy all this at one time, we would pick, like to your point, like the error CMTS, we'd pick that one. We don't need a whole lot of data for that. We don't need to have a lot of data governance study work for that, right? Because we already know what we're doing. We're just getting configs. So that's what we want to do, is start small and identify the use cases. And then we actually, the POPs is a big plus. We can pull you in for 30 days in a secure environment. You haven't bought any hardware, software, and we can give you the test run to see what that looked like, and give you the numbers that would tell you, is this going to make sense or not?
Any questions?
Questions?
That's very good.
I have one.
Yes.
So you talked about PCAP analysis.
Yep.
Have you all reached out directly to like Gerald and the whole Wireshark team of maybe where they could put some hooks inside the actual analyzer to make this a more seamless experience?
That's a good question. Yeah, we have not done that. I would assume, it's a good question, I have not even checked on that. It probably is something that they're working on. I mean, you guys, what's interesting is how everybody's adding all of this, right? I use Microsoft's Visual Studio Code, and I use PyCharm for my Python scripting, and I new feature that literally asked me, do I want to add AI capabilities to this?
Any other questions?
One more.
Yes.
So because you work with so many service providers and different systems and all of that, do y'all have to write APIs to go for each program that the customer uses, and does that require the customer to take more additional licenses on different programs?
Do we write the API?
Well,
I'm not sure.
To access different programs that companies use. So one company may use NetBox, wherever they're extracting information to get messages from.
Yep.
When you guys go in and you're looking at the point where you're trying to figure out where we can be useful, right? What can
yep.
we do for you? And say that, wow, we have a particular program that allows you us to see this error or this is what's going on in the network. But so do you guys have to use API to do that? Or how do you access that information outside of Telnet or anything?
It's a good question. So I guess I'd have to know exactly which app that you're talking. For the most part, most vendors provide APIs at no cost to you. So it'd just be a matter of getting a hold of that API. And our team would have to figure out kind of what data you're trying to get. Because even with NetBox example, there's a lot of API calls that you would send, which I'm not even sure if it's considered. I mean, you're sending curl commands, honestly, to NetBox. But it's a good question. It would be the API would be provided. We would lean on APIs if it's provided, but then we would use like Telnet and that to get past anything else that's not supported, any older gear.
One final question. Anyone? Thank you so much. Thank you.